The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Spondyloarthropathies and reactive arthritis is presented by Dr. Robert DiGiovanni.
Disclosures, none already, none. All right, learning objectives. How do you diagnose the diagnose spondyloarthritis? What are the clinical features and presentations of the spondyloarthropathies? What are their radiographic findings? And what are the different treatment options available for spondyloarthropathies? And I'll tell you that you're going to get inundated with it. You're going to see it on TV because with newer criteria for non-radiographic spondyloarthropathies, they estimate something like 2.7, 2.8 million people in the United States have this disease. So it's been underdiagnosed. So that's why you're seeing all of these commercials, all the direct marketing, because all the pharmaceutical companies realize that this is what an untapped area of treatment. So we talk about the spondyloarthropathies. Of course, we're talking about the classic is ankylosing spondylitis. We used to call it Marie-Strumpel's disease. Now we have the category of non-radiographic axial spondyloarthropathy, which sometimes was called undifferentiated spondyloarthropathies, psoriatic arthritis, arthritis associated with inflammatory bowel disease, reactive arthritis, previously called Reiter's, but we no longer use that terminology, and juvenile onset spondyloarthritis. So when we look at the spondyloarthropathies, we tend to divide it up into two broad domains of axial involvement, the spine and sacroiliac joints, and peripheral spondyloarthritis. So you can see that this Venn diagram that ankylosing spondylitis and non-radiographic axial spondyloarthropathy occupy primarily the axial domain with some foray into the peripheral arthritis domain. Whereas psoriatic arthritis, reactive arthritis, and enteropathic arthritis on undifferentiated spondyloarthropathies tend to occupy that peripheral spondyloarthritis domain with a little bit of overlap into the axial, all right? Spondyloarthritis is differentiated from other forms of arthritis by the distribution and type of musculoskeletal manifestations and common extra-articular features, okay? So what are these features? Axial joint disease, especially sacroiliitis. Sacroiliitis, we would have said at one time, was the sine qua non of ankylosing spondylitis and spondyloarthropathies. Asymmetrical oligoarthritis, right? One joint. Why do we call it monoarthritis, oligoarthritis, polyarthritis? Because it helps us make a diagnosis. So oligoarthritis is more than one and less than five. It's two, three, or four joints, and that's a typical manifestation of these diseases. Dactylitis, or sausage digits, a very important feature, very highly distinct from what we see in rheumatoid arthritis. Enthesitis, inflammation where tendons insert on bones, a very important feature of the spondyloarthropathies, as well as some of the other types of features, even the spinal involvement, uveitis, nail involvement. All of these areas I'm going to show you are functional entheses and why we see inflammatory changes there. Eye inflammation, bowel inflammation, of course, the association with HLA-B27, MHC-1 type of protein, and a familial clustering of these diseases, as well as common skin in general and mucocutaneous types of involvement. So these manifestations will be seen repeated over and over again throughout the spondyloarthropathies, and we've divided these various, they call them now domains, into categories so that we can pigeonhole people for better treatment. Now, this is the ASAS, or is the Assessment of Spondyloarthritis Society. These are their criteria for axial spondyloarthritis. So you either have radiographic sacroiliitis or not. And if you don't, on X-ray, it's considered non-radiographic spondyloarthropathy. And the criteria are patients who have more than 3 months typically of what we call inflammatory back pain, which we'll discuss, and onset under 45 years of age. If they have spondyloarthritis on radiographic imaging, then all they need is one of these SPA features. Okay. If they do not have sacroiliitis on X-ray, but have a positive HLA-B27, then they're going to have two of those features. So inflammatory back pain, arthritis, enthesitis, uveitis, dactylitis, psoriasis, colitis, good response to NSAIDs, family history of spondyloarthropathies, the HLA-B27, or elevated C-reactive protein. Okay. For ASAS's classification of peripheral spondyloarthropathies, you have to have peripheral arthritis and or enthesitis and or dactylitis, plus one SPA feature. All of these are the same as we saw on the previous page, except preceding infection. So with axial spondyloarthropathies, they don't include prior infection. Here they have antecedent infection. Or they can have two from category B, other SPA features. So let's say they've got enthesitis, then they can have peripheral arthritis and dactylitis, or inflammatory back pain ever, or family history thereof. So let's discuss some cases, all right? And we know these are going to be in that category. We have a 37-year-old male who presents for evaluation of low back pain of insidious onset. He's had it for 5 years, and he's got prolonged morning stiffness. No trauma, he wasn't in a motor vehicle accident, and the next day he had low back pain and sciatic neuralgia. On physical exam, pretty much normal, lungs, heart is regular rate rhythm. He has some tenderness over the SI joints, and he has a modified Schober test. This should be 0.9 centimeters. He has no rashes, no tender synovitis. He's got negative rheumatoid factors, citrulline antibodies, ANA, although we don't recommend getting ANAs for low back pain, but commonly occurs in primary care clinics. So his ANA was negative, thank God. SED rate was 52, and CRP looks to be about 3 to 4 times the upper limits of normal. Normal is going to be about 5 milligrams per liter. So what's your most likely diagnosis here? Okay, what do you think? Raise your hand if you think it's a spondyloarthropathy. All right. Raise your hands if you think it's ankylosing spondylitis. Raise your hand if you think it's psoriatic arthritis. All right. So it turns out to be ankylosing spondylitis. This is a chronic systemic inflammatory disease, of course, affecting the SI joints, spine, and peripheral joints. Higher amongst men, about 2-to-3-to-1 ratio. Two subtypes being the axial spondyloarthropathies and the non-radiographic spondyloarthropathy. Manifestations can begin in late adolescence or early adulthood. Most commonly presents with inflammatory back pain, may have alternating pain from one side to another. About 30% of these patients will develop peripheral arthritis. The ACR slide that is shown here can be found on the ACR slide collection. It shows the progression of someone with ankylosing spondylitis over about a 20-year period. And we can see from about 1948 on the left into about early 1970s on the right. And the story is, at that point, he went into an ice cream store and he ordered a ice cream sundae with everything on it, and the person behind the counter said, "Crushed nuts." And he said, "No, arthritis." I'm going to get into trouble one of these days for that joke, but I can't resist. Honestly, so it's a very serious disease. This is another one of those pictures from the ACR slide collection where you can see most of the flexion occurring at the hip, which is where most of our forward flexion occurs, but how the spine is just rigid. So, what do we mean by inflammatory back pain? This is chronic pain that is better with exercise and worse with rest, particularly after sleeping all night. Think about that in contradistinction to somebody who, say, has a herniated disc. They wake up in the morning, the pressure's off the disc, off the nerve root. It feels pretty good, all right? But not for ankylosing spondylitis or spondyloarthropathies. Morning is a terrible time of day, that gelling phenomenon. Typically an insidious onset with longer than 3 months of duration, okay? Not the history is not going to be a motor vehicle accident or was lifting something heavy and suddenly got onset of back pain. Usually these are younger individuals, and part of the criteria is 45 as the cutoff. Marked improvement with NSAIDs very quickly is not diagnostic, but it's very helpful. This is from Room Secrets. You guys may have some of the Secrets books, and Room Secrets is a really good one for this stuff. Angspond is a nice mnemonic for, that's the word, mnemonic, so pretty sure it's a mnemonic, for recalling some of the extra-articular manifestations of the spondyloarthritis, arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis. A is for aortic insufficiency. You got to remember that one. N is for neurologic, such as subluxations, equine arachnoiditis, spinal stenosis. K is for kidney, such as secondary amyloidosis, but it's IgA nephropathy that I want you to recall, and chronic prostatitis. After a kidney, you know, you can go right down to N, which is nephropathy, and again, IgA nephropathy, all right? Spine, cervical fractures can occur. These patients can fracture those little bridging syndesmophytes that they form and get a pseudoarthrosis. Pulmonary, biapical pulmonary fibrosis. In contradistinction to the other rheumatic diseases where we get basilar onset of pulmonary fibrosis, here we see biapical. And then, of course, discitis or spondylodiscitis. I'm going to show you some pictures of that. And about a certain percentage, so let's say half, will have asymptomatic microscopic colitis as well. But the ones I want you to remember are aortic regurgitation, aortic insufficiency. You got to bring in your AS patient, you know, every 6 months to a year, auscultate their heart, you know, listen for that murmur, all right? Kidney, the question is always going to be IgA nephropathy. And lung, it's going to, if you see biapical pulmonary fibrosis, those are the three things, extra-articular, I certainly want you to remember. Physical exam findings in this top here, we have the modified Schober test. You draw a line at the base of the sacrum, and then you draw another line 10 centimeters from that. You can find the base of the sacrum, what they call the dimples of Venus. You then have the patient forward bend. Those two lines should distract to at least 15 centimeters. Less than that 5-centimeter distraction is abnormal. Our patient had 0.9. Next, you see chest expansion test. That should be more than 5 centimeters from full expiration to full inspiration. Less than 2.5 is abnormal. And then the occiput to wall distance is a good test also for monitoring their response to treatment by measuring how far their occiput is away from the wall. You can also measure to the tragus, but normally I measure to the occiput. Okay. Gainsland's test is another good test to test for sacroiliitis. If you just press over a sacroiliac joint, it might be inflamed, but you might not, you know, you can't tell because there's a lot of soft tissues over it. So here you put the patient in a supine position. You drop one leg off the table, holding the other leg in flexion. The leg that's dropped off the table, if there's ipsilateral sacroiliac pain, that's a positive Gainsland's test for sacroiliitis. The Patrick test is this figure four type of maneuver, and then you press down on the knee and ASIS. On the side opposite the knee, the leg that's being placed in that figure four, press down. If you get contralateral sacroiliac pain, that's a positive Patrick test for sacroiliitis. What blood test might help corroborate your diagnosis? Who votes for an ANA? Hands up. Thank you. Good. So ANCA. Well, we've discussed ANCAs. They're good for vasculitis, but not too good for low back pain. Aha, HLA-B27. Double-stranded DNA antibody, who wants that one? So who votes for HLA-B27? Okay. So the HLA-B27 is a HLA class 1 gene, so it's involved in ramping up CD8 T-cell responses, right? And the spondyloarthropathies are associated with this. If it's ankylosing spondylitis, you're talking about 90%. If it's found in, about, let's say, half or more of patients with other forms of spondyloarthropathies, about 70% of reactive arthritis. Now remember, the HLA-B27 is found in 6 or so, depending on the population you look at, 6 to 9% of the general population. So by itself, an HLA-B27 is neither diagnostic of a spondyloarthropathy, nor is it sufficient to diagnose a spondyloarthropathy. So you have a patient with a sudden onset of pain due to a motor vehicle accident, sciatic neuralgia, et cetera, you know, an HLA-B27 doesn't help. What imaging might you get on this patient? Well, lumbar x-rays, sacroiliac x-rays might be helpful. May have to get a sacroiliac MRI, and a lumbar MRI does not look at the sacroiliac joints. These are a couple of small data-rich slides. I'll just mention that sacroiliitis seen on plain radiographs is very, very sensitive and specific for spondyloarthropathies, okay? On plain radiographs in early disease, axial x-rays are typically going to be normal. It's going to take years for it to show up. Syndesmophytes, like bridging syndesmophytes, can be seen in up to 5% of cases, and again, take a while to develop. With radiographic sacroiliitis, we like to see New York grade 2 or 3 at least, so that we can call it. In non-radiographic SPA, we don't see sacroiliitis on the x-ray. An MRI is not necessary if you can see sacroiliitis on the x-ray, but if you can't, then the MRI can be really helpful in establishing non-radiographic SPA, and we can see active inflammatory lesions on T2-weighted and STIR, the short tau inversion recovery type of lesions. So, here's some pictures. This is normal, this is fused, and these are in between with narrowing and serrations. You're not going to be able to see them too well from your seats, but they're in your slide pack. And this is an MRI showing clear-cut bone edema, bone marrow edema, and osteitis on both sides of the sacroiliac joint. Again, normal, fused, kind of grade 2 and 3, and then this is an MRI showing sacroiliitis. Some of the other lesions you might see radiographically and on MRI. So the inflammation in the spine is in the outer fibers of the annulus fibrosus. So it tends to cause inflammation at the very corners of the vertebral body, and you get these shiny lesions called Romanus lesions. And the Romanus lesions can also be seen on MRI, as you see on the panel on the right. So those are little shiny lesions, and they get bony squaring of the vertebral bodies early on. Later on, you get calcification of the outer fibers of the annulus fibrosus, so you get these fine bridging syndesmophytes called Sharpie's fibers. I don't think you have to necessarily remember that, but this is what results in the classic bamboo spine. Some other kind of cool radiographs, the dagger spine, caused by calcification of the supraspinatus ligament, so you can see that kind of nifty calcified ligament right behind the spine, right through the spine. And then this is an ugly looking lesion down here, and that's called an Anderson lesion, which is a spondylodiscitis and can mimic infection or osteomyelitis. So the treatments for AS, initial treatment is NSAIDs. Inadequate treatment, we have numerous biologics, the TNF alpha inhibitors, the anti-IL-17 inhibitors, secukinumab. For isolated sacroiliitis, steroid injection might be helpful. The non-biologic DMARDs, such as methotrexate, don't help with axial skeletal involvement. Systemic glucocorticoids are avoided. Case two, 52-year-old male presents with evaluation of joint pain, present for about 6 months, primarily in the distal entophalangeal joints. He has a scaly rash on the scalp, he has pitting of his nails, tenors to palpation of the DIP joints, and there's synovitis, squishy, soft tissue swelling. A little anemic, he's got a negative rheumatoid factor, positive HLA-B27, which may or may not always occur, and his CRP is three times the upper limits of normal. Okay, who votes for osteoarthritis? Raise your hand. Who votes for rheumatoid arthritis? Raise your hand. Who votes for reactive arthritis? Raise your hand. Who votes for psoriatic arthritis? Good. All right. All right, let's discuss psoriatic arthritis in addition to our case. Women and men are equally affected, whites affected twice as often as other ethnic groups. Young people keeps coming back again, 35 to 50 years of age. Young people get rheumatic diseases. Incidence is 6 per 100,000 with a prevalence of 1 to 2 in the general per 1,000 in the general population. These are the CASPAR criteria if you'd like to see them for psoriatic arthritis. And as I said, classification criteria are for the purposes of inclusion into drug studies. But the thing is, you have to have at least 3 points. So you have patients with inflammatory arthritis. If they have present skin psoriasis, you get 2 points. If they have a history of psoriasis, you get a point. But even if they've never had psoriasis, have a family history of psoriasis, they get a point. If they got nail lesions such as pitting, you used to say 6 pits per nail, or onycholysis, you get a point. Dactylitis, you get a point. And look, you get a point for a negative test. You actually get a point for a negative rheumatoid factor, because that's what they're called, the seronegative spondyloarthropathies, right? Negative rheumatoid factor. If you get juxta-articular bone formation and erosion on radiograph, that gets a point. So this is plaque psoriasis of the scalp on the left, palmar and plantar pustular type psoriasis on the right, and guttate psoriasis below. The best predictors of arthritis development is actually scalp psoriasis and nail pitting. So, little word to the wise, if you ever see something like the hands pictured there, and particularly in the case where there's no family history of psoriasis, check an HIV on those individuals, because that could occur late in disease and can be very severe. Nail pitting can occur. We can see these nail pits, nail ridging and onycholysis, or lifting of the nail. And I would make a case so that this is a functional enthesis. The nail bed is like an enthesis where a tendon attaches onto a bone. And these are areas that, because of mechanical stress, in addition to inflammation, are affected by psoriatic arthritis. Okay, the Mole and Wright subgroups, Dr. Mole and Dr. Wright. There's distal arthritis, DIP predominant, involving nail pitting typically, nail changes. Asymmetric oligoarthritis, typically of the lower extremities. Symmetric polyarthritis, looks just like RA, indistinguishable. Arthritis mutilans and spondyloarthritis, which may also include sacroiliitis, typically unilateral. Many of these can overlap. People could develop more than one type. So we see the DIP, arthritis mutilans, looks just like RA kind, oligoarthritis or monarthritis of the knee, and spondyloarthritis, where you get much more exuberant type of bridging syndesmophytes with skip lesions. Same thing here, I want to get to both sides. DIP, arthritis mutilans with telescoping of the fingers, RA indistinguishable with Swan neck deformities and ulnar deviation, knee effusion, and spondyloarthritis. So some of the other manifestations would include enthesitis or enthesopathy, as we said, inflammation around the insertion of tendons to bones, joint capsules or fascia to bones. Pretty much specific to the spondyloarthropathies, really the most common is the Achilles, but any other place where you can think of an enthesis, such as epicondyles, iliac crest, etc., these can all be involved. And this picture shows on the left thickening of the Achilles tendon and the attachment site or Achilles enthesis at the os calcaneus. dactylitis, or sausage digit. Now with RA, you will see that fusiform synovitis just around the joints, whereas with a sausage digit, you get inflammation here. In the case of this one, it's the fifth toe. You get inflammation of the entire digit. The flexor and extensor tendon sheaths become inflamed. And that's typical of spondyloarthropathies. Eye inflammation, of course, conjunctivitis can be seen. But anterior uveitis, typically unilateral and recurrent, it can be very problematic for these individuals. It can precede the onset of joint inflammation by quite a number of years. So if you look at room secrets and you look at, you know, unilateral recurrent uveitis, you'll see that 50% are HLA-B27 associated. And in this case, besides the conjunctivitis, you can see that he's had recurrent bouts of uveitis because his iris is out of round, it's scarred, it's got what we call synecdoche eye formations, and so he has no pupillary reaction. And again, think of it this way, where the iris muscle attaches to the outside of the uveal tract, okay, to the ciliary body and so forth, is a functional enthesis. So, all right. Radiographic changes, I'm going to mention that you could get erosions and bone formation, and you can also see bridging syndesmophytes and sacroiliitis. The sacroiliitis tends to be more unilateral, and the inflammation in psoriatic arthritis in the spine tends to be in the anterior longitudinal ligament. So they start, if you can go right down to this picture, you can see that they start from the middle of one vertebral body and extend to the middle of the next. But you can see various stages of new bone formation and erosion, and finally that so-called pencil and cup deformity on the majority of these x-rays. Treatment options, we have non-pharmacologic. We have peripheral arthritis treatments, which would include NSAIDs, methotrexate and leflunomide, but again, these traditional DMARDs do not work for the axial skeletal involvement. And then we do have the option to transition to the TNF inhibitors, IL-17 agents that are now currently approved for psoriatic arthritis, secukinumab and ixekizumab. We have the IL-12/23 agents, and now there's a new one, it's an IL-23 by itself. PDE4 inhibitors, oral, apremilast, could be used in combination with one of the others, but it's, you know, that's an expensive combination. JAK inhibitors, tofacitinib is approved now, and abatacept, the co-stimulatory inhibitor, is now approved for psoriatic arthritis. For the psoriasis domain, the anti-IL-17s appear to be about the best treatments. Local steroids can be used, but systemic glucocorticoids are avoided. Last case, 24-year-old male, presents with 2-week history of knee and ankle swelling and associated pain. He has a new onset of low back pain. He recalls that several weeks prior, he had an episode of gastroenteritis with diarrhea, abdominal pain, and fever, which went away. His abdomen is soft now, non-tender, lungs are normal. There is a swelling of the left knee and right ankle and painful range of motion. He has a normal Schober test. X-rays of the lumbar spine and SI joints are normal. What do you think? Somebody blurt it out. Come on, anybody. You want to get to your coffee break, I know. Reactive arthritis, I heard? Okay, good. Reactive arthritis, prior known as Reiter's, typically presents as an asymptomatic oligoarthritis within weeks of an inciting infection. There's an enterogenic form, which is of equal sex distribution, and a urogenital form, predominantly male. The genetics of it is that 30 to 50% of reactive arthritis patients have HLA-B27, maybe a little higher than that in my opinion. 40% of patients have axial skeletal symptoms, and 25% will develop radiographic changes. The diagnosis of reactive arthritis is a clinical diagnosis and based on the pattern of findings and exclusion of other diseases. So what infections can set off a bout of reactive arthritis? Well, for GU, the classic ones are chlamydia, neisseria, and neuroplasma urolyticum. And, you know, as they say, chlamydia, it didn't stay in Vegas. So, GI, the ones you got to remember are Shigella, Campylobacter, Yersinia, Salmonella. But now we're seeing it come on strong because of C. diff and Vibrio, which we're seeing more commonly in the hospital settings. Others, other chlamydia, Lyme disease, of course, post-streptococcal arthritis, Hep C, Giardia, Mycoplasma, and we even have a case in the clinic of reactive arthritis to intravesicular BCG treatment. Some of the peripheral lesions, keratoderma blennorhagicum, warty-like lesions on the soles of the feet, and balanitis, circumscripta, as we see here. Treatment, about a half of patients, all symptoms resolve in less than 6 months. Most patients will resolve probably 70% in a year. Antibiotics are typically used only to treat the initial infection. NSAIDs, intra-articular steroids, or oral steroids, brief course if inadequate response. I don't like to use steroids orally, but in these patients, but it is recommended now for a short course. If they persist into a chronic reactive arthritis, then we may use a non-biological DMARD or, if refractory, a TNF inhibitor. Okay. So spondyloarthropathies as DOs, we see a lot of people with axial skeletal pain, low back pain, right up your alley. You guys should be looking for it.